Aid us now wholeheartedly. Then said to him long-tried royal Odysseus, Nay, let me speak, and do you mark and listen. Consider if Athena, joined with Father Zeus, suffice for us, or shall I seek for other aid? Then answered him discreet Telemachus, Excellent helpers are the two you name, who sit among the clouds on high. All else they govern, all mankind and the immortal gods. Then said to him long-tried royal Odysseus, Not long will they be absent from the mighty fray, when in my hall, betwixt the suitors and ourselves, the tug of war is tried. But go at early morning, straightway home, and join the audacious suitors. Thereafter, the swineherd shall bring me to the city, like an old and wretched beggar. And if they treat me rudely in my home, let the faithful heart within your breast endure what I must bear. Yes, though they drag me through the palace by the heels and out of door, or hurl their missiles at me, see and be patient still. Bid them, however, cease their folly, and with gentle words dissuade. They will not heed you, for their day of doom draws near. But this I will say further, mark it well. When wise Athena puts it in my mind, then I will nod my head, and you take note. And all the fighting gear that lies about the hall do you collect, and lay in a corner of the lofty chamber, carefully, every piece. Then with soft words beguile the suitors, when they, because they miss it, question you. I put it by out of the smoke, for it looks no longer like the armor which Odysseus left behind when he went away to Troy. It is all tarnished, where the scent of fire has come nigh. Besides, the son of Cronus brought this graver fear to mind. You might, when full of wine, begin a quarrel, and give each other wounds, making a scandal of the feast and of your wooing. Steel itself draws men on. Yet privily reserve two swords, two spears, two leathern shields for us to seize, to rush and seize. And thereupon shall Pallas Athena and all-wise Zeus confound the suitors. Nay, this I will say further, mark it well. If you are truly mine, my very blood, then, that Odysseus now is here, let no man know. Let not Laertes learn it, let not the swineherd, let none of the household, nor Penelope herself. But you and I alone will test the temper of the women. And we might also try the serving men, and see who honors and respects us in his heart, and who neglects and scorns a man like you. Then answered him his noble son, and said, My father, you shall know my heart, believe me, by and by. No laggard thoughts are mine. And yet I think your plan will prove, for neither of us, gain. And so I say, consider. Long will you vainly go, trying the different men among the farms, while undisturbed within the hall these waste your wealth with recklessness and do not spare. But I advise your finding out the women, and learning who dishonor you and who are guiltless. As to the men about the place, I would not prove them. Let that, at any rate, be thought of later, when you are really sure of signs from aegis-bearing Zeus. So they conversed together. But in the meanwhile, on to Ithaca ran the staunch ship which brought Telemachus and all his crew from Pylos. When they had entered the deep harbor, they hauled the black-hulled ship ashore, and stately squires carried their armor, and straightway bore the goodly gifts to Clytius' house. And now they sent a page to the palace of Odysseus, to tell the news to heedful Penelope, how Telemachus was at the farm, but had ordered that the ship sail to the city, lest the stately queen should be alarmed and shed a swelling tear. So the two met, the herald and the noble swineherd, upon the self-same errand, bearing tidings to the queen. And when they reached the palace of the noble king, the page said to Penelope, in hearing of her maids, O queen, your son has come from Pylos. But the swineherd stood beside Penelope, and so reported all that her dear son had bade him say. Then, when he had delivered all his charge, he departed to his swine and left the court and hall. But the suitors grew dismayed and downcast in their hearts, and came forth from the hall past the great courtyard wall, and there before the gate sat down to counsel. And first Eurymachus, the son of Polybus, addressed them. Friends, here is a monstrous action impudently brought to pass this journey of Telemachus. We said it should not be. Come, then, and let us launch the best black ship we have, and get together fishermen for rowers, quickly to carry tidings to our friends, and bid them sail for home with all speed they may. The words were hardly uttered, when Amphinomus, turning in his place, sighted the ship in the deep harbor, some of her crew furling the sail, and some with oars in hand. Then, lightly laughing, thus he called to his companions, "No need to send a message now, for here they are. Some god has told our plot, or our men saw the vessel pass and could not catch her." He spoke, and all arose and hastened to the shore. Swiftly the black-hulled ship was hauled ashore, and stately squires carried their armor. The men themselves went in a body to the assembly, and suffered no one, either young or old, to join them there. And thus Antinous, Eupeithes' son, addressed them. "Strange how the gods help this man out of danger. By day our sentries sat upon the windy heights, posted in close succession, and after sunset we did not pass the night ashore, but sailed our swift ship on the sea, awaiting sacred dawn, lying in wait to seize and slay Telemachus. Meantime, some god has brought him home. Then let us here contrive a miserable ending for Telemachus, not letting him escape. For while he lives, nothing, be sure, will prosper. He is himself shrewd in his thoughts and plans, and people here proffer us no more aid. Come then, before he gathers the Achaeans in a council. Backward he will not be, I think. He will be full of wrath, and rising he will tell to all how we contrived his instant death, but could not catch him. And when men hear our evil deeds, they will not praise them, but they may cause us trouble and drive us from our country, and we may have to go away into the land of strangers. Let us be quick, then, and seize him in the fields, far from the city, or on the road, at least, and let us take possession of all his substance and his wealth, sharing all suitably among ourselves. The house, however, we might let his mother keep, or him who marries her. If this plan does not please you, and you will let him live to hold his father's fortune, then let us not devour his store of pleasant things by gathering here, but from his own abode let each man make his wooing and press his suit with gifts. So may Penelope marry the man who gives her most and comes with fate to favor." As he thus spoke, the rest were hushed to silence. But Amphinomus, the illustrious son of noble Nisus and grandson of Aretius, who from Dulichion, rich in wheat and grass, had led a band of suitors, and more than all the rest found favor with Penelope, through what he said, because his heart was upright. He, with good will, addressed them thus, and said, "Nay, friends, I would not like to kill Telemachus. It is a fearful thing to kill one of a royal line. Let us, at least, first ask the gods for counsel, and if the oracles of mighty Zeus approve, I will myself share in the killing, and urge the others, too. But if the gods turn from us, I warn you to forbear." So said Amphinomus, and his saying pleased them. Soon they arose and entered the hall of Odysseus, and went and took their seats on polished chairs. Heedful Penelope, meanwhile, had planned anew to show herself among the suitors, overweening in their pride. Within the palace she learned of the intended murder of her son, for the page Medon told her, who overheard the plot. So to the hall she went with her attendant women. And when the royal lady reached the suitors, she stood beside a column of the strong-built roof, holding before her face her delicate wimple. And she rebuked Antinous, and spoke to him, and said, "Antinous, full of all insolence and wicked guile, in Ithaca they say you are the foremost person of your years in judgment and in speech. But such you never were, madman! Why do you seek the death and ruin of Telemachus, and pay no heed to suppliants, though Zeus be witness for them? 'Tis impious plotting crimes against one's fellow men. Do you not know your father once took refuge here, in terror of the people? For they were very angry because he joined with Taphian pirates, and troubled the Thesprotians, men who were our allies. So the people would destroy him, would snatch his life away, and swallow all his large and pleasant living.
But Odysseus held them back and stayed their madness. Yet you, insultingly, devour his house. You woo his wife, murder his child, and make me wholly wretched. Forbear, I charge you, and bid the rest forbear.
Then answered her Eurymachus, the son of Polybus, Daughter of Icarius, heedful Penelope, be of good courage. Let not these things vex your mind. The man is not alive, and never will be born, who shall lay hands upon your son Telemachus, so long as I have life and sight on earth. For this I tell you, and it shall be done. Soon the dark blood of such a man shall flow around my spear. Many a time the spoiler of towns, Odysseus, has set me on his knee, put roasted meat into my hands, and given me ready wine. Therefore I hold Telemachus dearest of all mankind. I bid him have no fear of death, at least not from the suitors. Death from the gods can no man shun. So he spoke, cheering her, yet was himself plotting the murder. But she, going to her bright upper chamber, bewailed Odysseus, her dear husband, till on her lids clear-eyed Athena caused a sweet sleep to fall. At evening, the noble swineherd joined Odysseus and his son. Busily they prepared their supper, having killed a yearling pig, and Athena, drawing near, touched with her wand Laertes' son, Odysseus, and made him old once more, and clad him in mean clothes, for fear the swineherd, looking in his face, might know and go and tell the tale to steadfast Penelope, not holding fast the secret in his heart. Now Telemachus first addressed the swineherd, saying, "So, you are come, noble Eumaeus. What news, then, in the town? Are the haughty suitors at home again after their ambuscade, or are they watching still for me to pass?" Then swineherd Eumaeus, you answered him and said, "I had no mind to search and question while stumbling through the town. My inclination bade me to tell my message with all speed and hasten home. There overtook me, though, an eager newsman of your crew, a page, who told his story to your mother first. Moreover, this I know, because I saw it. I was already on the road above the town, where stands the hill of Hermes, when I saw a swift ship entering our harbor. A crowd of men were on her. Heavy she was, with shields and double-pointed spears. 'Twas they, I thought, and yet I do not know." As he thus spoke, revered Telemachus smiled, and glancing at his father, shunned the swineherd's eye. Now, ceasing from their labor of laying out the meal, they fell to feasting. There was no lack of appetite for the impartial feast. And after they had stayed desire for drink and food, they turned toward bed and took the gift of sleep. Book 17. The Return of Telemachus to Ithaca. Soon as the early rosy-fingered dawn appeared, Telemachus, the son of princely Odysseus, bound to his feet his goodly sandals, took the ponderous spear which fitted well his hand, and setting off to town, addressed his swineherd thus, "Father, I go to the city to let my mother see me. For I know she will not cease from gloomy grief and crying until she sees my very self. This charge I lay on you. Bring the poor stranger to the city, to beg his living there, and whosoever will shall give a cup and crust. I cannot put up all, my heart is full of trouble. And if the stranger chafes at this, so much the worse for him. I like to speak the truth." But wise Odysseus answered him and said, "Friend, I do not care to tarry here. Better a beggar should beg his living in the town than in the fields, and he who will may give. For I am now too old to stay about a farm and answer all the orders of an overseer. Go then your way. This man shall be my guide, even as you bid, when I have warmed me at the fire and when the sunshine comes. The clothes I wear are miserably bad, and the early frost may harm me. The town is far, they say." He spoke, and through the farmstead passed Telemachus, moving with rapid stride and sowing seeds of evil for the suitors. And when he reached his stately dwelling, he took his spear and set it up by a tall pillar, while he himself went farther in and over the stone threshold. His nurse was first to see him. You're a Clea, now busy spreading fleeces on the carven chairs. With a burst of tears she came straight forward, and other maids of hardy Odysseus gathered round and fondly kissed his face and neck. Then from her chamber came heedful Penelope, like Artemis or golden Aphrodite. Round her dear son, weeping, she threw her arms and kissed his face and both his beauteous eyes, and sobbing, said to him in winged words, "So you are come, Telemachus, dearer than light to me. I said I should not see you any more after you went away by ship to Pylos so secretly, without consent of mine, to hear about your father. Come then, and tell me all you chance to see." But wise Telemachus made answer, "My mother, do not stir my tears, nor move my heart within, for I am only now escaped from utter ruin. But bathe, and putting on fresh garments, go to your upper chamber with your maids, and vow to pay full hecatombs to all the gods, if Zeus some day will grant us deeds of vengeance. But I will go to the marketplace, to find a stranger who joined me on my journey here from Pylos. I sent him forward with my gallant crew, and bade Piraeus take him home, and entertain him well, and give him honor till the time that I should come." Such were his words. Unwinged they rested with her. Bathing and putting on fresh garments, she vowed to all the gods to pay full hecatombs if Zeus some day would grant her deeds of vengeance. Presently, through all the hall, forth went Telemachus, his spear in hand, two swift dogs following after. And marvelous was the grace Athena cast about him, that all the people gazed as he drew near. And round him flocked the haughty suitors, kind in their talk, but in their hearts brooding on evil. He turned aside from the great company of these, and off where Mentor sat with Antiphus and Halitherses, who were of old his father's friends, he went and sat him down. And much they questioned. Piraeus, the famous spearman, now drew near, leading the stranger through the city to the marketplace. Not long, then, from his guest, delayed Telemachus, but came to meet him, though Piraeus was the first to speak and say, "Telemachus, quickly send women to my house, and let me send to you what Menelaus gave." Then answered him discreet Telemachus, "Piraeus, as yet we do not know how matters here will be. Suppose the haughty suitors at the palace should slay me privily and share my father's goods. I had rather you yourself should keep and enjoy the gifts than any one of these. But if I sow for these men death and doom, when I am merry, merrily fetch all here." So saying, he led the way-worn stranger home, and entering the stately buildings, they threw their coats upon the couches and the chairs, and went to the polished baths and bathed. And when the maids had bathed them, and anointed them with oil, and put upon them fleecy coats and tunics, out of the baths they came and sat upon the couches. And water for the hands a servant brought, in a beautiful pitcher made of gold, and poured it out over a silver basin for their washing, and spread a polished table by their side. Then the grave housekeeper brought bread and placed before them, setting out food of many a kind, freely giving of her store. The mother of Telemachus sat on the farther side, by a column of the hall, resting upon a couch, spinning fine threads of yarn. So on the food spread out before them they laid hands, and after they had stayed desire for drink and food, then thus began heedful Penelope, "Telemachus, I go to my upper chamber and lay me on my bed, which has become for me a bed of sorrows, ever watered with my tears since Odysseus went away to Ilius with the Atreidae. Because you did not deign, before the haughty suitors entered, plainly to tell what tidings you have heard about your father's coming." Then answered her discreet Telemachus, "Nay, mother, I will tell you all the truth. We went to Pylos, to Nestor, the shepherd of the people, and he, receiving me within his lofty palace, gave me such hearty welcome as a father gives his child when lately come from far, after a long time away. So heartily he entertained me, he and his noble sons. Of hardy Odysseus, he said he had not heard from any man on earth if he were alive or dead. But with horses and a strong-built chariot, he sent me to the son of Atreus, to the spearman Menelaus. There I saw Argive Helen, her in behalf of whom Argives and Trojans bore so much at the gods' bidding. And Menelaus, good at the war cry, soon asked me on what errand I came to royal Lacedaemon. I told him all the truth, and then he answered thus, and said to me, "Heavens, in a very brave man's bed they sought to lie, the weaklings, as when in the den of a strong lion a hind has laid, asleep, her newborn sucking fawns, then roams the slopes and grassy hollows seeking food, and by into his lair the lion comes, and on both hind and fawns brings ghastly doom. So shall Odysseus bring a ghastly doom on these. Ah, Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, if with the power he showed one day in stately Lesbos, when he rose and wrestled in a match with Philomelides, and down he threw him heavily while the Achaeans all rejoiced, if, as he was that day, Odysseus now might meet the suitors, they would all find quick turns of fate and bitter rites of marriage. But as to what you ask thus urgently, I will not turn to talk of other things and so deceive you. But what the unerring old man of the sea told me, in not a word will I disguise or hide from you. He said he saw Odysseus on an island, in great distress, at the hall of the nymph Calypso, who holds him there by force. No power has he to reach his native land, for he has no ships fitted with oars, nor crews to bear him over the broad ocean ridges. So said the son of Atreus, the spearman Menelaus. And this accomplished, back I sailed. The gods gave breezes and brought me swiftly to my native land." So he spoke, and stirred the heart within her breast. But godlike Theoclymenus addressed them thus, "O honored wife of Laertes' son, Odysseus, certainly Menelaus did not know the truth. Listen instead to words of mine, for I will plainly prophesy and not conceal. First, then, of all the gods, be witness Zeus, and let this hospitable table and the hearth of good Odysseus, whereto I come, be witness. Odysseus is already within his native land, biding his time or moving, and understanding all these wicked deeds is sowing seeds of ill for all the suitors. As proof, while on the well-benched ship I marked a bird of omen, and I announced it to Telemachus." Then said to him heedful Penelope, "Oh, stranger, would these words of yours might be fulfilled. Soon should you know my kindness and many a gift from me, and every man you met would call you blessed." So they conversed together. Meanwhile, before the palace of Odysseus, the suitors were making merry, throwing the discus and the hunting spear upon the level pavement, holding riot as of old. But now, when it was dinner time, and from the fields around the flocks returned, the shepherds leading who were wont to lead, then Medon spoke, a man most loved of all the pages, one who was ever present at their feasts. "Now, lads, since all your hearts are cheered with sports, come to the house and let us lay the table. One's dinner at the proper time is no bad thing." He spoke, and up they sprang and went to heed his words. And entering the stately buildings, they threw their coats upon the couches and the chairs, and they began to kill great sheep and fatted goats, to kill sleek pigs and the heifer of the herd, and so to make their meal. Meanwhile, at the farm, Odysseus and the noble swineherd were making ready to depart to town. And thus began the swineherd, the overseer, "Stranger, so you desire to go to town today, just as my master ordered, though I myself would rather leave you as a watchman for the farm. But of him I stand in fear and awe, lest he hereafter chide me. Hard is a master's censure. Come then and let us go. The day is passing. It will be colder by and by toward night." Then wise Odysseus answered him and said, "I see, I understand, you speak to one who knows. Let us go on, and all the way be you my guide. But give me a stick, if you have one cut, to lean upon, for you said the road was rough." He spoke, and round his shoulders slung his miserable wallet full of holes, which hung upon a cord. Aeneas gave the staff desired, and so the two set forth. But dogs and herdsmen stayed behind to keep the farm. Unto the town Aeneas led his lord, like an old and wretched beggar leaning upon a staff. Upon his back were miserable clothes. Now, as they walked along the rugged road, nearing the city, they reached a stone-built fountain running clear, from which the townsfolk draw their water, a fountain made by Ithacus, by Neritus and Polyctor. There was a grove of stream-fed poplars encircling it, and from the rock above ran the cool water, while at the top was built an altar to the nymphs, where all who passed made offerings. Here the son of Dolius, Melanthius, met them, driving the goats that were the best of all the flock to make the suitors dinner. Two herdsmen followed after. Seeing Eumaeus and Odysseus, he broke into abuse, and speaking to them used rude and indecent words, which stirred Odysseus' blood. Now, sure enough, the vile man leads the vile. As ever, God brings like and like together. Where are you carrying that glutton, you good-for-nothing swineherd, that nasty beggar to make mischief at our feasts? A man to stand and rub his back on many doors and tease for scraps of food, but not for swords and cauldrons. If you would let me have him for a watchman at my farm, to be a stable cleaner and fetch fodder to the kids, he might, by drinking whey, grow a big thigh. But no, for he has learned bad ways and will not turn to work. He will prefer to beg about the town, teasing for stuff to feed his greedy maw. But this I tell you, and it shall be done. If he comes near the house of princely Odysseus, many a footstool, from men's hands flying round his head, his ribs shall rub as he is knocked about the house. He spoke, and as he passed, recklessly kicked Odysseus on the hip, but did not force him from the pathway. Fixed he stood. Odysseus doubted whether to spring and with his cudgel take his life, or to lift him in the air and dash his head upon the ground. But he was patient, and, by thought, restrained himself. And now the swineherd, looking him in the face, rebuked the man, and, stretching forth his hands, prayed thus aloud, "Nymphs of the fountain, daughters of Zeus, if ever Odysseus burned on thy altars thighs of lambs and kids, and wrapped them in rich fat, grant this my prayer. May he return, and heaven be his guide. Then would he scatter all the smartness you now recklessly assume, roaming continually around the town, while careless herdsmen let the flock decay." Then answered him Melanthius the goatherd, "So, so, how the cur talks, as if he knew some magic arts. Some day I'll take him on a black and well-benched ship far off from Ithaca, and get me a great fortune. Oh, that Apollo of the silver bow would smite Telemachus at home today, or let him fall before the suitors, as certainly as for Odysseus, far in foreign lands, the day of coming home is lost." So saying, he left them, slowly plodding on, and off he went, and soon he came to the king's palace. Entering at once, he took his seat among the suitors over against Eurymachus, for he liked him best of all. Then those who served passed him a portion of the meat, while the grave housekeeper brought bread and set before him for him to eat. Meantime, Odysseus and the noble swineherd halted as they drew near, while round them came notes of the hollow lyre. For Phemius lifted up his voice to sing before the suitors. And taking the swineherd by the hand, Odysseus said, "Surely, Eumaeus, this is the goodly palace of Odysseus, easy to notice even among many. Building joins building here. The court is built with wall and cornice, and a double gate protects. No man may scorn it. I notice, too, that a great company are banqueting within, for the savory steam mounts up, and in the house resounds the lyre, made by the gods the fellow of the feast." And the swineherd, Eumaeus, you answered him, and said, "You notice quickly, dull of thought and nothing. Come, then, and let us plan what we must do. You enter the stately building first and mingle with the suitors, while I stay here behind. Or, if you like, wait you, and I will go. But do not linger long, or somebody may spy you at the door and throw a stone or strike you. Take care, I say." Then long-tried royal Odysseus answered, "I see, I understand. You speak to one who knows. But go you on before. I will stay here behind, for I am not unused to blows and missiles. Staunch is my soul, for many dangers have I borne from waves and war. To those let this be added. Yet I cannot disregard a gnawing belly, the pest which brings so many ills to men. To ease it, timbered ships are fitted and carry woe to foemen over barren seas." So they conversed together. But a dog, lying near, lifted his head and ears. Argus it was, the dog of hearty Odysseus, whom long ago he reared but never used. Before the dog was grown, Odysseus went to sacred Ilius. In the times past, young men would take him on the chase for wild goats, deer, and hares. But now he lay neglected, his master gone away, upon a pile of dung which had been dropped before the door by mules and oxen, and which lay there in a heap for slaves to carry off and dung the broad lands of Odysseus. Here lay the dog, this Argus, full of fleas. Yet even now, seeing Odysseus near, he wagged his tail and dropped both ears, but toward his master he had not strength to move. Odysseus turned aside and wiped away a tear, swiftly concealing from Aeneas what he did. Then straightway thus he questioned, "Aeneas, it is strange this dog lies on a dunghill. His form is good, but I am not sure if he has speed of foot to match his beauty, or if he is merely what the table-dogs become, which masters keep for show." And swineherd Eumaeus, you answered him, and said, "Aye, truly, that is the dog of one who died afar. If he were as good in form and action as when Odysseus left him and went away to Troy, he would be much surprised to see his speed and strength. For nothing could escape him in the forest depths, no creature that he started. He was keen upon the scent. Now he has come to ill. In a strange land his master perished, and the slack women give him no more care. For slaves, when masters lose control, will not attend to duties. Ah, half the value of a man, far-seeing Zeus destroys when the slave's lot befalls him." So saying, he entered the stately house and went straight down the hall among the lordly suitors. But upon Argus fell the doom of darksome death when he beheld Odysseus 20 years away. By far the first to see the swineherd as he walked along the hall was princely Telemachus, and he quickly gave a nod to call him to his side. Glancing around, Eumaeus took a stool which stood at hand, where the carver sat at feasts within the hall, when carving for the suitors the many joints of meat. Carrying the stool to the table of Telemachus, he placed it on the farther side, and there sat down. And then a page took up a dish of meat and passed it, and from the basket gave him also bread. Close following after, Odysseus entered the palace, like an old and wretched beggar leaning upon a staff. Upon his back were miserable clothes. He sat down on the ashwood threshold just within the door, leaning against the cypress post which long ago the carpenter had smoothed with skill and leveled to the line. But to the swineherd said Telemachus, calling him to his side and taking a whole loaf from the goodly basket, and also all the meat his hand stretched wide would hold, "Take this, and give the stranger, and bid him move about and beg of all the suitors. Shyness is no good comrade for a needy man." He spoke, and the swineherd went as soon as he heard the order, and standing by Odysseus, said in winged words, "Stranger, Telemachus gives this, and bids you move about and beg of all the suitors. Shyness, he says, is no good comrade for a beggar man." Then answering him, said wise Odysseus, "O Zeus above, may Telemachus be blessed among mankind, and may he get whatever in his heart he longs for." He spoke and took the food with both his hands and laid it down before his feet on his mean wallet, and so ate, the while within the hall the bard was singing. But when the meal was ended and the sacred bard had ceased, the suitors raised an uproar in the hall. And now Athena, drawing near Laertes' son Odysseus, urged him to gather crusts among the suitors and learn who were the righteous ones and who the lawless. though not even thus would she preserve a man of them from ruin. So off he went to beg of all from left to right, stretching his hand around as if he had been long a beggar. They pitied him and gave, and wondering at the man, asked one another who he was and whence he came. And Melanthius the goatherd said, "Hear from me, suitors of the illustrious queen, something about the stranger. I saw him a while ago, and certainly it was the swineherd brought him hither. The man himself I do not really know, nor of what tribe he boasts himself to be." When he had spoken, Antinous rebuked the swineherd thus, "Infamous swineherd, why bring this man to town? Have we not here already plenty of vagabonds and nasty beggars to make mischief at our feasts? Do you not mind that men devour the living of their lord by gathering here? And do you ask this fellow too to come?" Then swineherd Eumaeus, you answered him and said, "Antinous, you speak but ill, noble although you are. Whoever goes and calls a stranger from abroad, unless indeed the stranger is a master of some craft, a prophet, healer of disease, or builder, or else a wondrous bard who pleases by his song. For these are welcomed by mankind the wide world through. A beggar who would ask to be a torment to himself? But you are always harsh, more than the other suitors, to the servants of Odysseus, especially to me. And yet I do not care so long as heedful Penelope is living in the palace, Penelope and Prince Telemachus." Then said discreet Telemachus, "Hush, do not make him a long answer. It is Antinous' way ever to tease with ugly talk. He stirs up others too." He spoke, and to Antinous in winged words he said, "Antinous, finally you care for me as a father for his son, bidding me drive this stranger forth by a compulsive word. God, let that never be. Take of the food and give him. I do not grudge it. Indeed, I bid you give. Be not disquieted about my mother or any servant of the house of great Odysseus. But in your breast there is no thought of giving. Far better you like to eat than give to others." Then answering, said Antinous, "Telemachus of the lofty tongue and the unbridled temper, what do you mean? If every suitor gave as much as I, for 3 months' space at least, the house would miss him." So saying, he seized his stool and drew it out from under the table where it lay. On it he used to set his dainty feet while feasting. Now all the rest had given food and filled with bread and meat the beggar's wallet. A moment, and Odysseus would go back to the threshold to taste the Achaean's bounty. Before Antinous he paused and said, "Give me some food, kind sir. You do not seem the poorest of Achaeans, rather the chief, for you are like a king. So you shall give me bread more generously than others, and I will sing your praise the wide world through. For once I lived in luxury among my mates in a rich house, and often gave to wanderers, careless who they might be or with what needs they came. Servants I had in plenty, and everything besides by which men live at ease and are reputed rich. But Zeus, the son of Cronus, brought me low. His will it was. He sent me with a roving band of plunderers to Egypt, a long voyage to my ruin. In Egypt's stream I anchored my curved ships. Then to my trusty men I gave command to stay there by the ships and guard the ships, while I sent scouts to points of observation. But giving way to lawlessness and following their own bent, they presently began to pillage the fair fields of the Egyptians, carrying off wives and infant children and slaughtering the men. Soon the din reached the city. The people there, hearing the shouts, came forth at early dawn, and all the plain was filled with footmen and with horsemen and with the gleam of bronze. Then Zeus the Thunderer brought on my men a cruel panic, and none dared stand and face the foe. Danger encountered us on every side. So the Egyptians slew many of our men with the sharp sword, and carried others off alive to work for them in bondage. They gave me to a friend, who chanced to meet them upon his way to Cyprus, Metur, son of Iasus, who ruled with power in Cyprus. Thence I am now come hither, sore distressed." Then answered him Antinous and said, "What god has brought to us this pest, this mar feast here? Stand off there in the middle, back from my table, or you shall find a bitter Egypt and a bitter Cyprus too, brazen and shameless beggar that you are. You go to all in turn, and they give lavishly. No scruple or compunction do they feel at being generous with others' goods, while there remains abundance for themselves. Then, stepping back, said wise Odysseus, Indeed, in you, then, wisdom does not go with beauty. From your own house you would not give a suppliant salt, if sitting at another's table you will not take and give me bread. Yet here there is abundance. As he thus spoke, Antinous was angered in his heart the more, and looking sternly on him, said in winged words, Now you shall never leave the hall in peace, I think, now you have taunted me. So saying, he seized his footstool, flung it, and struck Odysseus on the back of the right shoulder near the spine. Firm as a rock he stood. The missile of Antinous did not move him. Silent he shook his head, brooding on evil. Then, once more, walking toward the threshold, down he sat, laid off his well-filled wallet, and thus addressed the suitors. Hearken, you suitors of the illustrious queen, and let me tell you what the heart within me bids. One feels no smart or indignation in his mind, if struck while fighting for his own possessions, his oxen, say, or white-wooled sheep. But Antinous gave this blow because of my poor belly, that wretched part which brings to men such ills. If then for beggars there be gods and furies, may death's doom seize Antinous before his marriage. Then said Antinous, Eupeithes' son, Stranger, sit still and eat, or go off elsewhere. Or for such talk as this, young men will drag you through the house by hand and foot, and strip off all your skin. At these his words all were exceeding wroth, and a rude youth would say, Antinous, 'twas not well done to assault the wretched wanderer. A doomed man you, if he should be a god come down from heaven, and gods in guise of strangers from afar in every form do roam our cities, marking the sin and righteousness of men. So said the suitors. Antinous did not heed their words, but Telemachus nursed in his heart great indignation at the blow. Yet let no tear fall from his eyelids to the ground. Silent he shook his head, brooding on evil. When heedful Penelope heard how in the hall a man was struck, she said to her maids, May the archer god Apollo strike you even so. Whereat Eurynome, the housekeeper, made answer, If only prayers of ours might be fulfilled, no one of them should see another bright-throned dawn. And heedful Penelope replied, Nurse, hateful are they all. Their ways are evil. But Antinous is like dark doom itself. Into the house strays some poor stranger, and begs for bread as need compels. Then, while all others gave and filled his wallet, Antinous struck him with a footstool on the back of the right shoulder. So talked Penelope with her maids, as she sat within her chamber, while royal Odysseus was busied with his meal. Then, calling the noble swineherd, thus she spoke, Go, noble Eumaeus, go bid the stranger come to me. I wish to greet him, and to ask if he has heard of hardy Odysseus, or with his own eyes seen him. He looks a travelled man. Then swineherd Eumaeus, you answered her, and said, Would, queen, the Achaeans would be still. What he can tell would charm your very soul. 3 nights I had him, 3 days I kept him at the lodge. He came to me at once on escaping from his vessel. Yet all that time he never ended telling me his troubles. And just as when men gaze upon a bard who has been taught by gods to sing them moving lays, and they long to listen endlessly so long as the bard will sing, even so he held me spellbound as he sat within my room. He calls Odysseus his ancestral friend, and says his home is Crete, where the race of Minos dwell. Thence he is now come hither, sore distressed, and onward driven near.
He declares he has heard that Odysseus is at hand in the rich land of the Thesprotians, a living man, and that he brings a mass of treasure home.
Then said to him heedful Penelope, Go call him hither, to tell his story here before my face. Let men make merry, sitting before the door, or here within the house. Their hearts are gay. Untouched at home their goods are lying, their bread and their sweet wine. On these their servants feed. But haunting this house of ours day after day, killing our oxen, sheep, and fatted goats, these suitors hold high revel, drinking sparkling wine with little heed. Much goes to waste, for there's no man here fit like Odysseus to keep damage from our doors. But if Odysseus should return home to his native land, soon with his son's help he would punish these men's crimes. As she spoke thus, Telemachus loudly sneezed, and all the hall gave a great echo. Penelope laughed, and to Eumaeus straightway said in winged words, Pray go, and call the stranger before me as I bade. Do you not notice how my son sneezed at my words? Therefore no partial death shall strike the suitors. On all it falls, none shall escape from death and doom. Nay, this I will say farther, mark it well. If I shall find that all the stranger tells is true, I will clothe him in a coat and tunic, goodly garments. She spoke, and the swineherd went as soon as he heard the order, and standing near the stranger said in winged words, Hear, good old stranger, heedful Penelope is calling, the mother of Telemachus. Her heart inclines her to ask for tidings of her husband, so full of grief is she. And if she finds that all you tell is true, she will clothe you in a coat and tunic, things you greatly need. Moreover, you shall beg your bread about the land and fill your belly. Whoever will shall give. Then said to him long-tried royal Odysseus, Eumaeus, I would straightway tell my whole true story to the daughter of Icarius, heedful Penelope, for well I know about Odysseus. We have borne the self-same sorrows. But I have fears about this crowd of cruel suitors, whose arrogance and outrage reaches the iron heavens. For even now, when, as I walked along the hall, doing no harm, this person struck and hurt me, neither Telemachus nor others interfered. Bid then Penelope, however eager, wait in the hall till sunset. Then let her ask about her husband's coming, after giving me a seat beside the fire, for the clothes I wear are poor. That you yourself well know, because it was of you I first sought aid. He spoke, and the swineherd went as soon as he heard the order, but as he crossed the threshold, thus spoke Penelope, Are you not bringing him, Eumaeus? What does the wanderer mean? Is he afraid of some bad man, or simply shy at being in the palace? To be a homeless man and shy is bad. Then swineherd Eumaeus, you answered her and said, Rightly he speaks, as any man must think, if he would shun the violence of these audacious men. He bids you wait till sunset. And it is better, too, for you, my queen, to speak to the stranger privately and listen to his tale. Then said to him, heedful Penelope, Not without wisdom thinks the stranger thus, whoever he may be, for mortal men have never yet so wantonly wrought outrage. She spoke, and the noble swineherd entered the throng of suitors when he had told her all, and straightway to Telemachus he spoke these winged words, his head bent close that others might not hear. My dear, I go to guard the swine and matters there, your livelihood and mine. Do you mind all things here? Above all else, keep yourself safe and see that nothing happens. Many of the Achaeans are forming wicked plans, whom Zeus confound before harm falls on us. Then answered him discreet Telemachus, So be it, father. Go when you have supped, and in the morning come and bring us goodly victims. To me and the immortal gods leave all things here. He spoke, and once more down Eumaeus sat upon a polished bench. Then, after having satisfied desire for food and drink, he departed to his swine, leaving the courts and hall crowded with feasters, who with dance and song were making merry, for evening now drew near. Book 18. The Fight of Odysseus and Iris. There came into the hall a common beggar who used to beg about the town of Ithaca, and everywhere was noted for his greedy belly, eating and drinking without end. He had no strength nor sinew, but in bulk was large to see. Arnaeus was his name, the name his honored mother gave him at his birth. But Iris, all the young men called him, because he used to run on errands at anybody's bidding. Coming in now, he tried to drive Odysseus from the house, and jeeringly he spoke these winged words. "Get up, old man, and leave the doorway, or you'll soon be dragged off by the leg. Do you not see how everybody gives the wink and bids me drag you forth? I still hold back. Up then, or soon our quarrel comes to blows." But looking sternly on him, wise Odysseus said, "Sir, I am doing you no harm by deed or word, nor do I grudge it when men take and give you much. This door will hold us both. Surely you should not grudge the goods of others. You seem a wanderer like myself, but the gods may grant us fortune. Yet do not challenge me too far with show of fist, or you may rouse my rage. And old as I am, I still might stain your breast and lips with blood. Then I should have more peace tomorrow than today. For a second time, I think, you would not seek the hall of Laertes' son Odysseus." Then angrily replied the beggar Iris, "Sure, how glibly the glutton talks, like an old oven woman! But I will do him an ugly turn, knocking him right and left and scattering all the teeth out of his jaws upon the ground, as if he were a pig spoiling the corn. Gird yourself, then, that all these men may watch our fighting. Yet how could you defend yourself against a younger man?" Thus, on the well-worn threshold before the lofty door, they fiercely wrangled. Revered Antinous observed them, and, gaily laughing, he thus addressed the suitors. "Friends, nothing so good as this has ever happened. What sport God sends this house! The stranger here and Iris are goading one another on to blows. Let us quickly set them on." He spoke, and laughing, all sprang up and flocked around the tattered beggars. And Antinous, Eupeithes' son, called out, "Hearken, you haughty suitors, while I speak. Here are goat paunches lying by the fire, set there for supper, full of fat and blood. Whichever wins and proves the better man, let him step forth and take what one of these he will. And that man shall hereafter always attend our feasts, and we will allow no other beggar to come here asking alms." So said Antinous, and his saying pleased them. But in his subtlety said wise Odysseus, "It is not fair, my friends, a younger man should fight an old one, one broken, too, by trouble. Yet a reckless belly forces me to bear his blows. Come then, all swear a solemn oath, that nobody helping Iris will strike with heavy hand an unfair blow and put me down before the man perforce." He spoke, and all then took the oath which he required. And after they had sworn and ended all their oath, once more revered Telemachus spoke out among them. "Stranger, if heart and daring spirit tempt you to meet the man, be not afraid of any of the Achaeans, for he shall fight the crowd who strikes at you. I am the host. The princes, too, assent, Antinous and Eurymachus, both honest-minded men." He spoke, and all approved. Meanwhile, Odysseus gathered his rags around his waist and showed his thighs. So fair and huge, and his broad shoulders came in sight, his breast and sinewy arms. Athena, drawing nigh, filled out the limbs of the shepherd of the people, that all the suitors greatly wondered, and glancing at his neighbor, one would say, "Iris will soon be no more Iris, but catch a plague of his own bringing. So big a thigh the old man shows under his rags." So they spoke, and Iris' heart was sorely shaken. Nevertheless, the serving man girt him and led him out, forcing him on in spite of fears. The muscles quivered in his limbs, but Antinous rebuked him and spoke to him and said, "Better you were not living, loud-mouthed bully, and never had been born, if you quake and are so mightily afraid at meeting this old man, one broken by the troubles he has had. Nay, this I tell you, and it shall be done. If he shall win and prove the better man, I will toss you into a black ship and send you to the mainland, off to King Echetus, the bane of all mankind, and he will cut your nose and ears off with his ruthless sword, and tearing out your bowels, give them raw to dogs to eat. So he spoke, and a trembling greater still fell on the limbs of Iris. But into the ring they led him, and both men raised their fists. Then long-tried royal Odysseus doubted whether to strike him so that life might leave him as he fell, or to strike lightly and but stretch him on the ground. Reflecting thus, it seemed the better way lightly to strike, for fear the Achaeans might discover it was he. So when they raised their fists, Iris struck the right shoulder of Odysseus. But he struck Iris on the neck below the ear and crushed the bones within. Forthwith from out his mouth the red blood ran, and down in the dust he fell with a moan, gnashing his teeth and kicking on the ground. The lordly suitors raised their hands and almost died with laughter. But Odysseus caught Iris by the foot and dragged him through the doorway until he reached the courtyard and the opening of the porch. Against the courtyard wall he set him up aslant, then thrust a staff into his hand, and speaking in winged words he said, "Sit there a while, and scare off dogs and swine, and do not try to be the lord of strangers and of beggars while pitiful yourself, or haply some worse fate may fall upon you." He spoke, and round his shoulders slung his miserable wallet full of holes, which hung upon a cord. Then, once more, walking to the threshold, he sat down. Meanwhile, the others pressed indoors with merry laughter, and thus accosted him. "Stranger, may Zeus and the other immortal gods grant all you wish for most, even all your heart's desire, for stopping this insatiate fellow's begging through the land. Soon we'll take him to the mainland, off to King Echetus, the bane of all mankind." So they spoke, and royal Odysseus was happy in the omen. Antinous, too, set a great paunch before him, full of fat and blood. And Amphinomus took two loaves out of the basket and offered them, and pledged him in a golden cup, and said, "Hail, aged stranger! May happiness be yours in time to come, though you are tried by many troubles now." Then wise Odysseus answered him and said, "Indeed, Amphinomus, you seem a man of understanding. Such was your father, too. For I've heard a good report of Nisus of Dulichion, how he was brave and rich. They say you are his son. You appear kind. So I will speak, and do you mark and listen. Earth breeds no creature frailer than a man, of all that breathe and move upon the earth. For he says he nevermore will meet with trouble, so long as the gods give vigor and make his knees be strong. Then, when the blessed gods send sorrow, this too he bears with patient heart, though much against his will. Ever the mood of man, while on the earth, is as the day which the Father of men and gods bestows. Once, among men, I too was counted prosperous. But many wrongs I wrought, led on by pride and sense of power, confident in my father's and my brother's aid. Wherefore, let none in any wise be reckless, but calmly take whatever gifts the god provide. Yet I behold you suitors working wrong, wasting the wealth and worrying the wife of one who, I can tell you, will not be absent long from friends and native land, for he is very near. May then some heavenly power conduct you to your homes, and may you not encounter him whenever he returns to his own native land. Surely not bloodless will the parting be between the suitors and himself, when underneath this roof he comes once more." He spoke, and pouring a libation, drank the honeyed wine, then back in the hands of the guardian of the people placed the cup. Amphinomus walked down the hall, heavy at heart, shaking his head. His soul foreboded ill. Yet, even so, he did not escape his doom, for Athena bound him fast, beneath the hand and spear of Telemachus, to be perforce laid low. So back he turned, and took the seat from which he first arose. And now the goddess, clear-eyed Athena, put in the mind of Icarius' daughter, heedful Penelope, to show herself among the suitors, that she might thus open the suitors' hearts most largely, and so become more highly prized by husband and by son than heretofore. Idly she laughed, and thus she spoke and said, "Eurynome, my heart is longing as it never longed before, to show myself among the suitors, hateful although they be. I would say to my son a word that may be useful. Tell him to mingle not at all with the audacious suitors, for they speak kindly but have evil thoughts behind." And in her turn Eurynome, the housewife, answered, "Truly, my child, in all this you speak rightly. Go then, and tell this saying to your son, and do not hide it. Only first wash your body and anoint your cheeks. Go not with such a tear-stained face. To grieve incessantly makes matters worse. And now, your son is what you often prayed the immortals you might see him, a bearded man already." Then said to her heedful Penelope, "Eurynome, urge me not out of kindness to wash my body and anoint me with the oil. All charm of mine the gods who hold Olympus took away when he departed in the hollow ships. But tell Autonoe and Hippodamia to come hither, to attend me in the hall. Among the men I will not go alone for very shame." So she spoke, and through the hall forth the old woman went to give the message to the maids, and bid them come with speed. And then a new plan the goddess formed, clear-eyed Athena. She poured sweet slumber on the daughter of Icarius, and lying back she slept, and every joint relaxed there on her couch. Meanwhile the heavenly goddess gave her immortal gifts, to make the Achaeans marvel. And first she bathed her lovely cheeks with an immortal bloom. She made her also taller and larger to behold, and made her whiter than the new-cut ivory. So having done, the heavenly goddess went her way, and out of the hall the white-armed damsels came, entering the room with noise. Sweet slumber left Penelope. She drew her hands across her cheeks, and thus she spoke, "Oh, utterly wretched as I am, soft slumber wrapped me round. Would that chaste Artemis would send a death so soft, instantly now, that sad at heart no more I might not waste my days mourning the many-sided worth of him, my husband, the best of all Achaeans." So saying, down she went from her bright upper chamber, yet not alone, two damsels followed her. And when the royal lady reached the suitors, she stood beside a column of the strong-built roof, holding before her face her delicate wimple, the while a faithful damsel stood upon either hand. The suitors' knees grew weak, with love in their hearts were tranced. Each prayed to be her spouse. But she addressed Telemachus, her own dear son. "Telemachus, your mind and judgment are no longer sound. While still a boy, you managed more discreetly. But now, when you are grown and come to man's estate, and any stranger would call you the son of a man of worth if he observed your height and beauty, now mind and judgment are not trusty any more. For only see what happened in the hall. You let this stranger be maltreated there. And what will be thought if a stranger, seated within our house, should meet with harm through brutal handling? Shame and disgrace would come on you from all men." Then answered her discreet Telemachus, "Mother, I do not blame you for your anger. Yet in my heart I know and fully understand the right and wrong. Before I was a child, and I am not always able now to see what wise ways are. For the suitors disconcert me, coming on every side with wicked plans while I have none to help. However, the quarrel of Iris and the stranger turned out in no wise to the suitor's mind. In strength the stranger proved the better man. Ah, Father Zeus, Athena, and Apollo, would that the suitors in our halls might, beaten, hang their heads, some in the yard, some in the house, and so their limbs be loosed, as that same Iris at the courtyard gate now sits and hangs his head, like a man drunk and cannot stand straight on his feet, nor go off home. Wherever that may be, because his limbs are loose. So they converse together. But now Eurymachus addressed Penelope. Daughter of Icarius, heedful Penelope, if all Achaeans in Iasian Argos could behold you now, more suitors would be feasting in your halls tomorrow. For you excel all womankind in beauty, height, and balanced mind within. Then answered him, heedful Penelope, Eurymachus, all excellence of mine in face or form, the immortals took away the day the Argive host took ship for Ilius, and with them went my lord Odysseus. If he would come and tend this life of mine, greater would be my fame and fairer then. Now I am in distress, such woes God thrusts on me. Oh, when he went and left his native land, holding my hand, my right hand, by the wrist, he said, Wife, I do not think the male Achaeans will all come back from Troy safe and unharmed. For they say the Trojans are good fighters, hurlers of spears, drawers of bows, and riders on swift horses, such men as soon decide the struggle of uncertain war. Therefore I do not know if God will bring me back, or if I shall be captured there in Troy. On you must rest the care of all things here. Be mindful of my father and my mother here at home, as you are now, and even more when I am gone. And when you see our son, a bearded man, then marry whom you will, and leave the house now yours. Such were his words, and all now nears its end. The night will come when a detested marriage falls on doomed me, whom Zeus has stripped of fortune. One bitter vexation, too, touches my heart and soul. This never was the way with suitors heretofore. They who will woo a lady of rank, a rich man's daughter, rivaling one another, bring oxen and sturdy sheep to feast the maiden's friends, and give rich gifts besides. They do not, making no amends, devour another's substance. She spoke, and glad was long-tried royal Odysseus to see her winning gifts and charming the suitors' hearts with pleasing words, while her mind had a different purpose. Then said Antinous, Eupeithes' son, Daughter of Icarius, heedful Penelope, if any Achaean cares to bring gifts hither, accept them, for it is not gracious to refuse a gift. But we will never go to our estates, nor elsewhere either, till you are married to the best Achaean here. So said Antinous. And his saying pleased them. And for the bringing of the gifts each man sent forth his page. The page of Antinous brought a fair large robe of many colors. On it were golden brooches, 12 in all, mounted with twisted clasps. To Eurymachus his page presently brought a chain wrought curiously in gold and set with amber, bright as the sun. His servants brought Eurydamas a pair of earrings, each brilliant with 3 drops. From them great beauty sparkled. Out of the house of Lord Pisander, son of Polyctor, his servant brought a necklace, a jewel exceeding fine, and other servants brought still other fitting gifts from the Achaeans. Then went the royal lady to her upper chamber, her damsels carrying the goodly gifts. Meanwhile the suitors to dancing and the gladsome song turned merrily, and waited for the evening to come on. And on their merriment dark evening came. Straightway they set 3 braziers in the hall to give them light, and piled upon them sapless logs, long seasoned, very dry, and freshly split, with which they mingled brands. By turns the maids of hardy Odysseus fed the fire, and he, the high-born, wise Odysseus, thus addressed them. You damsels of Odysseus, a master long away, go to the room where your honored mistress stays. There twirl your spindles by her side, and furnish her good cheer, as you sit within her hall, and card with your hands the wool. I will supply the light for all these here, Yes, if they wish to stay till bright throned dawn, they will not weary me. I am practiced to endure. At these his words the damsels laughed and glanced at one another, and Melantho rudely reviled Odysseus. Melantho, the fair-faced girl, daughter of Dolius, whom Penelope had reared and treated as her child, granting her every whim. But for all this, she entertained no sorrow for Penelope, but loved Eurymachus and was his paramour. She now reviled Odysseus in these abusive words.
"Why, silly stranger, you are certainly some crack-brained person, unwilling to go to the coppersmith's to sleep or to the common lodge. But here you prate continually, braving these many lords and unabashed at heart. Surely the wine has touched your wits, or else it is your constant way to chatter idly. Are you beside yourself because you beat that scapegrace Iris? A better man than Iris may by and by arise to box your pate with doughty blows and pack you out of doors, all dabbed with your blood." But looking sternly on her, wise Odysseus said, "You cur, I go, and at once tell Telemachus what words you use, and he shall rend you limb from limb upon the spot." So saying, by his words he frightened off the women. They hurried along the hall. The knees of each grew weak with terror, for they thought he spoke in earnest. He, meanwhile, keeping up the fire, stood by the blazing braziers, observing all the men. But other thoughts his heart debated, thoughts not to fail of issue. Yet Athena allowed the haughty suitors not altogether yet to cease from biting scorn. She wished more pain to pierce the heart of Laertes' son, Odysseus. So Eurymachus, son of Polybus, began to speak, and jeering Odysseus raised a laugh among his mates. "Hearken, you suitors of the illustrious queen, and let me tell you what the heart within me bids. Not without guidance of a god this fellow comes to the household of Odysseus. At any rate, a torchlight seems to rise from his very head, for hair upon it there is none, no, not the least." With that he called to the spoiler of towns, Odysseus. "Stranger, if I would take you, would you like to work for hire on the outskirts of my farm? There will be pay enough, gathering stones for walls and setting out tall trees. There, for a year, I would provide you food, furnish you clothing, and put sandals on your feet. Still, now that you have learned bad ways, you will not care to work, but will prefer to beg about the town, so long as you can find wherewith to stuff your greedy maw." Then wise Odysseus answered him and said, "Eurymachus, I wish that we might have a match at work, in springtime when the days are long upon the grass. And I would take a well-curved scythe, and you another like it, to test our power of work, fasting right up till dark, with grass still plenty. Or, if again the match were driving oxen, choice, tawny, large ones, both well fed with grass, equal in years, and pulling well together, tireless in strength. And here were a field, 4 acres large, whose soil would take the plough. Then you should see if I could cut a straight and even furrow. Or once more, if the son of Cronus by some means stirred up war this very day, and I had a shield and pair of spears and a brazen helmet fitted to my brow, then would you see me join the foremost in the fight, and you would no longer jest and talk about my belly. No, you are very proud, and your temper is disdainful. No doubt you seem a great man and a mighty, because you mix with few and they of little worth. But should Odysseus come and reach his native land, soon would these doors, however wide, prove all too narrow, as you hurried through the porch." As he spoke thus, Eurymachus grew angrier still at heart, and looking sternly on Odysseus, he spoke these winged words, "Wretch, I shall do you mischief soon for prating so, braving these many lords and unabashed at heart. Surely the wine has touched your wits, or else it is your constant way to chatter idly. Are you beside yourself because you beat that scapegrace, Iris?" So saying, he seized a footstool,
Odysseus crouched by the knees of Amphinomus of Dulichion, fearing Eurymachus, who hit the right hand of the wine-pourer. Down went his beaker, clattering to the ground, and he himself fell moaning in the dust. But the suitors broke into uproar up and down the dusky hall, and glancing at his neighbor, one would say, "Would that the vagabond had perished elsewhere before he came in here! He would not then have caused this din. Here we are, brawling over beggars. No more delight in jolly feasts. Now worse things have their way." Then said to them revered Telemachus, "Sirs, you are mad, and do not hide what you have drunk and eaten. Some god excites you. But now that you have feasted well, go home to bed as quickly as you please. Yet I drive none away." He spoke, and all with teeth set in their lips marveled, because Telemachus had spoken boldly. And then Amphinomus, the illustrious son of noble Nisus, and grandson of Aretias, addressed them, saying, "Friends, in answering what is fairly said, none should be angry and retort with spiteful words. Let none abuse the stranger, nor any of the servants in great Odysseus' hall. Come, then, and let the wine-pourer give pious portions to our cups, that after a libation we each go home to bed. And let us leave the stranger here within Odysseus' hall, to be cared for by Telemachus, for to his house he came." He spoke, and to them all his words were pleasing. So a bowl was brewed by the lord Mulius, a Dulichian page and follower of Amphinomus. To all in turn he served, and they, with a libation to the blessed gods, drank of the honeyed wine. Then, after they had poured and drunk as their hearts would, desiring rest, they each departed homeward. Book 19. The Meeting with Penelope, and the Recognition by Eurycleia. So in the hall was royal Odysseus left behind, plotting to slay the suitors with Athena's aid. And straightway to Telemachus he spoke these winged words, "Telemachus, this fighting gear must all be laid away, and with soft words you must beguile the suitors when they, because they miss it, question you. I put it by out of the smoke, for it looks no longer like the armor which Odysseus left behind when he went away to Troy. It is all tarnished where the scent of fire has come nigh. Besides, this graver fear some god put in my mind, you might, when full of wine, begin a quarrel and give each other wounds, making a scandal of the feast and of your wooing. Steel itself draws men on." He spoke, and Telemachus heeded his dear father, and calling aside nurse Eurycleia, said, "Nurse, go and keep the women in their rooms, while I place in the chamber my father's goodly armor, which, as it lies uncared for round the house, smoke stains while he is gone. I have been foolish. Now I will place it where no scent of fire shall come nigh." Then said to him his dear nurse Eurycleia, "Oh, would, my child, you might incline to heedful ways, and mind the house and guard its treasures. But who shall go and bear the light? You will not let the women stir who might have lighted you." Then answered her discreet Telemachus, "This stranger here, for I will allow no idle man to touch my bread, come he from whence he may." Such were his words. Unwinged they rested with her. She locked the doors of the stately hall. And now arose Odysseus and his gallant son, and bore away the helmets, bulging shields, and pointed spears. Before them Pallas Athena, holding a golden lamp, made beauteous light. Thereat Telemachus said to his father quickly, "Father, my eyes behold a mighty marvel. The palace walls and the fair interspaces, the pine wood beams and the uprising pillars, are all aglow as from a blazing fire. Surely a god is in this house, even such as they who hold the open sky." But wise Odysseus answered him and said, "Hush, check your thoughts and ask no question. It is indeed a signal from the gods who hold Olympus. Go you to rest. I will continue here to try these damsels and your mother more, and she shall weep and question me of all." So he spoke, and through the hall forth went Telemachus with blazing torch, to rest within that chamber where he always lay when pleasant sleep drew near. Here then he laid him down, awaiting sacred dawn, while, In the hall, royal Odysseus stayed behind, plotting to slay the suitors with Athena's aid. Now from her room came heedful Penelope, like Artemis or golden Aphrodite. Beside the fire where she was wont to sit, they placed a chair fashioned with spiral work of ivory and silver, which Icmalius the carpenter had made long time ago, setting upon the lower part a rest for feet, fixed to the chair itself. Over the whole a large fleece had been thrown. Here heedful Penelope now sat down. Soon came the white-armed damsels from their hall, and cleared away the abundant food, the tables and the cups from which the proud lords had been drinking. The embers from the braziers they threw upon the floor, and in the braziers piled fresh heaps of wood to furnish light and warmth. Then thus Melantho once more chid Odysseus. "Stranger, are you still here to plague us all night long, prowling about the house, watching the women? Be off, vile thing, and be content with eating, or you will soon be hit with a brand and go." But looking sternly on her, wise Odysseus said, "Woman, why rail at me with such an angry heart? Is it that I am foul and wear mean clothes and beg about the land? Necessity constrains me. This is what beggars and what homeless people are. Yet once I lived in luxury among my mates, in a rich house, and often gave to wanderers, careless who they might be or with what need they came. Servants I had in plenty, and everything besides, by which men live at ease and are reputed rich. But Zeus, the son of Cronus, brought me low. His will it was. And you, too, woman, some day yet may lose those charms in which you now excel the other maids. Your mistress may become provoked to anger with you. Odysseus may return. There still is room for hope. But if he is dead, as you suppose, and to return no more, yet by Apollo's grace he has a worthy son, Telemachus, whose eye no woman in the hall escapes in her misdeeds, because he is no longer now the child he was." Heedful Penelope heard what he was saying, and she rebuked her maid, and spoke to her, and said, "Not in the least, you bold and shameless creature, have you escaped my eye in doing guilty deeds. Your head shall answer for them. Full well you knew, you heard it from myself, that I intended to ask tidings of this stranger here in my hall about my husband, for I am sore distressed." She spoke, and to the housekeeper, Eurynome, she said, "Eurynome, pray, bring a bench and a fleece on it, and let the stranger sit and tell his tale, and listen too to me, I wish to question him." She spoke. The other with all speed brought her a polished bench, and placed it there, and on it laid a fleece. Then long-tried royal Odysseus sat him down, and thus began heedful Penelope, "Stranger, I will myself first ask you this. Who are you? Of what people? Where